Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
I remember not having enough money to go get shoulder treatment, not having enough money to put, like, you know, food on my table.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. The good.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
The bad.
I'm scratching my head. The performances was just lacked that intensity.
And the amber.
Off the Ball's performance rankings.
Well, welcome to this morning's edition. Very special performance rankings. Where do you start? You start in many places, but there's a Manchester United crest staring right back at me. And all of you who are watching on YouTube this morning, you're all very welcome, because the scoreline at Anfield was Liverpool 1, Manchester United 2. Twice United took the lead in this game. It's their first win at Anfield in nearly a decade. Check out these two statistics, lads. Very obvious and very jarring. Liverpool's first Premier League home defeat in 400 days. Manchester United's first consecutive win in the Premier League under Ruben Amorim.
It only took a year, fair play.
Only took just shy of 12 months.
Your man with the hair.
As my right honourable colleague mentions correctly.
He's licking his lips now.
How about this other one? Via Optijoe. Manchester United's Ruben Amorim is only the third manager to win both of his first two Premier League away games at the reigning champions. And how about this one? Liverpool have lost four consecutive games in all competitions for the first time since November 2014.
Yeah, that's crazy.
The reigning champions would have to be like, seasons apart, obviously. Right? That's it.
The only other managers to do it were Manuel Pellegrini and Antonio Conte.
Okay.
Sorry.
But I guess, look, it's a fancy...
Pellegrini and Conte did what?
This what I just said.
Won their first two away games against the reigning champions.
Reigning champions, yeah, correct.
Really?
No.
Did they not win any other away games in between?
No.
No, the first two times. You're misreading that. As in, like, when they played the champions.
Yeah.
Not just their first two away games.
Oh, first... Okay.
First time they played the reigning champions, they won away from home.
And is this the first time they've won two away games?
United.
Anyway, sorry. Okay. I don't understand.
Basically, it's a fancy way of saying, right, that United went to the champions last season and won.
He's a giant
killer. And
gone
to the champions this season and won.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's a rarity in the Premier League. That's all that. That's all it. Just a bit of fun.
Yeah.
That's all this is.
I didn't get
it.
Staff, yeah.
That's just a bit of staff.
Monday morning.
But what a game, right? And we can go loads of directions here, right?
Yeah.
So we can talk about United. I suppose this is United section, so we give them green straight away. Don't worry about that. We give them green.
Yeah,
so
good.
How do we talk about United in this context? I thought it was the system. You know, I thought it was the players. So they go to Anfield and they put on this performance of note where Brian Mbeumo's goal after 63 seconds. I think it's the second fastest goal that United have scored against Liverpool in the Premier League. Nicky Butt was the only one that was faster in Eric Cantona's return.
Yeah.
From the kung fu kick, right? So mad early to happen.
I think Jamie Carragher's own goal was third and that's...
Yeah, that's right. And they put it to him yesterday and he laughed at himself, which I like. So my feeling, I don't know about you or yourself or anyone out there, my feeling was when United went 1-0 up that early was actually very positive and I had a feeling that United were going to win the game.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, why did I think that? When there's evidence against that all over the shop. You know, we were talking about Ruben Amorim's tenureship at Manchester United ending surely imminently after the Brentford debacle. That was 3-1 days ago. It was done and dusted. It was a matter of when.
Yeah.
So then they go and beat Sunderland 2-0. What do you make of that? At the international break, we're shrugging our shoulders. What do you talk about when it comes to Ruben Amorim and Manchester United? Then they go to Anfield and win this game. They scored twice, just like they did in January of this year in the away game last season, when, funnily enough, Harry Maguire had a chance to win that game deep into stoppage time and blazed it over
so
the bar.
His pass was bad, though. No.
They showed that.
He gets it.
They showed that in the aftermath on Sky. They were like, "Let's have a look at this, just to remind everybody." And this time he fixed it.
Did you see who took the place of Maguire this weekend? By the way, Gianfilippo Mateta, who scored a hat trick for Crystal Palace against Bournemouth in their 3-3 draw, had the Harry Maguire chance to win the game for Palace after scoring his hat trick, and also, just like our old Harry friend, ballooned it.
Skies.
Nevertheless, back to this game, right? So it was a hell of a performance in many ways, and a strange game too, that we'll get to Liverpool, and that Liverpool created bundles of opportunities. Cody Gakpo hit the post 3 times before he scored. Liverpool switched to this mad 4-2-4 system in the hour mark.
I don't know what the problem with Hugo Ekitike is, why he isn't playing. Mo Salah, I mean, I was trying to whisper this when he was in form this time last year, that he still has this mad technical blip in his game where he looks real basic.
Yeah.
But that's kind of overshadowing his play totally. They seem to have problems. But of all the issues that Liverpool have, they still created a ton of chances. And yeah, when they equalised, I think a lot of people would have thought, well, they're going to go on and win this game now.
Yeah.
But United's response to that, 4 minutes later to go ahead, what a cross from Bruno Fernandes. And what a strange performance from United, because there was a zip to them. They were causing Liverpool huge problems on their left-hand side. But there's still such limitations in the team, right? Because you look at it, Diogo Dalot, like, my God. Like, I counted four different mess-ups that he had in the first half alone. And he's on the left wing, back position. I'm thinking, if they get an upgrade in him, if they get another centre mid who can actually last the course, because Casemiro did all right, but they had to take him off when he got booked.
Yeah.
They have another centre mid. They need another centre back. Luke Shaw, I don't think, is a long term option.
No, and who knows about the goalkeeper?
Goalkeeper's had two games, he looked fairly solid.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, God almighty, if they actually get upgrades in these players and this system starts working, okay, then you'll see Ruben Abraham's point.
Yeah.
It's all about the Brighton game this weekend at Old Trafford. If they lose that game, we're back to the same conversation a few weeks ago. We absolutely are.
No.
Because they did the same thing against City last year. No. They won at City and like, oh, here we go now. And it went back.
It'll be that Ireland thing of like, yeah, you can play great against good teams. What's the point if you can't beat
suited.
A performance like this takes that out, surely.
You think?
I think for a rational conversation about what's happening, it's like there are slow incremental improvements. There are going to be blips. Brighton's record against the supposedly good teams is very good. And so, wasn't it? Brighton won four games and they were against the, like, they beat City, they beat Chelsea. Am I right about this already this season? They didn't beat Arsenal, they didn't play. I'm just trying to remember.
I think you talk about rational conversations all day. I think if Brighton beat Manchester United this weekend, next Monday morning, we're all, what's going on? Same thing again.
And so there's no credit in the bank from this, is the point.
There's credit in the bank? Like, yeah, Jesus, don't get me wrong.
Okay.
Relax now. I'm not saying there's not. There was credit in the bank after they beat Man City last season. And then what happened? So you can't trust it yet. You can't trust it. This is like being in a toxic relationship, but you have a good day. Oh, they're back.
Yeah.
Oh, they're back now. This is what I fell in love with.
This is very...
Oh, hold on now. Give it some consistency.
It's very mature of you. You'd normally kind of not get carried away, but you'd enjoy the win a bit more, but you're holding back a little bit.
Well, listen, I'm enjoying it. I hope I'm showing my enjoyment today, you know?
Yeah.
But
you're smiling.
You
but
enjoy
you're
it with the company of people who want to enjoy it with you, you know?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just fighting a lone fight here. And that's fine, too. I don't mind that.
Yeah.
It was a great day.
But you're cautious.
It was a great weekend.
A little bit cautious, though.
No, I'm not cautious at all. I'm talking about the realities of where we're at, right? Okay. That you can support, when you support the club, you have to support everything about them. The good and bad. That's what you marry.
And so that's the whole point, isn't it? That actually, if they do get beaten by Brighton next week, it's actually not a scandal. If they don't play well, if they look bereft of ideas or whatever, it's about, surely the whole point here is that there's like something to cling on to. One, the owners have said they're not going to sack him irrespective of what happens. The team seem to respond to that. Two, the attacking players that they've signed are good, which they didn't have last season. And there is a long-term plan. You obviously have said if they get this and this and this and this and this, like, yeah, fair enough. Which means that they're going to wait, and then you can begin to judge how long this is going to take. But I thought, from Manchester United's perspective, it's great to get this, but it is also, like, Amram's still going to be here at Christmas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No?
Yeah,
he will be, yeah, he will be, yeah.
It depends. It depends. Like, if they lose the next five games, you're going to have to bring it back up again, of course. But for the moment, right? You're talking about this game and this game alone, if we wanted to stick on this performance.
Yeah.
And it was really good from start to finish. And there was still a bit of flaws, so there's still a bit of stuff that you can work on. Like the personnel aside, and there are like mass improvements that you can make there. Because it's only when a team plays well that you actually see the limitations of the individuals within. So when I talk about Dalot, right? He gives the ball away for the counter-attack for Cody Gakpo when he hits the post. And then he fails to control on a mad cross-field ball on the counter. Yeah. Okay? And then he has another botched shot when it's crossed over to him to volley. And he misses that. And then he scuffs the clearance inside the box, which falls to a Liverpool player.
Yeah.
Now, when they switched him to right wing back, when they brought on Patrick Dorgu, who's another player who's very limited, he was slightly improved.
Thought he was a bit better, yeah.
So it actually gives you a bit of hope about what they could do if they get the right people in.
Yeah.
And that's what Amrim's been saying consistently to all of us, that none of us were listening, according to him, is that like it's not about the system. Don't worry about the system. And he's saying the big thing is about the effort and belief. So there was self-belief and abundance there at Anfield yesterday. And I'm fascinated to know where the hell that came from.
Yeah.
Because that was a really good performance. Flaws and all, the amount of chances ceded to Liverpool, everything included. There wasn't really any point in that game where I thought United were playing badly. Do you know what I mean? They let Liverpool create a chance. When Liverpool equalised,
yeah,
it was coming. But I wouldn't say United were necessarily playing badly. They were always that little bit dangerous on the counter-attack. And it was a really good team performance. And when you were supporting a side, that's what you're looking for. That's the type of game.
Yeah.
So there's loads, there's unbelievable joy this morning among Manchester United supporters. But the cautionary tale has to be apparent, lads, because it's been 12 years of proof that just because that happened yesterday doesn't mean that's the start of anything. But you can enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah.
And that was a great day.
I appreciated the 10-15 minute period after Liverpool's triple substitution, where Liverpool looked like they were going to go on and score. But we were still going at them on the counter, like, because they obviously switched to 4-2-4. And we didn't mirror it, but then we started playing the exact same in terms of like, there was times where Liverpool had 7 or 8 up front and we weren't really tracking back. We were like happy enough to deal with what was going on and then go back up the other end and counter-attack ourselves. But I feel positive, but I don't feel like, yeah, it's about Brighton for me as well. I feel like that's the team that you're looking to beat now, funny enough. Like, yeah, Liverpool, I would have taken a draw. I'm not taking a draw against Brighton, though.
Do you know when people say, oh, we're just looking for a bit of consistency in our manager or player or whatever? It was like, by a nature of a league, the vast majority of teams are never that consistent. You're going to win 2 and you might lose the next one draw. It's not really about that. It's just about seeing, as Gerard's pointed to, it's performance more than result. It's like, is this actually going somewhere at all? Because it is mental that you'd have a performance like Brentford that's in the very recent past and then a performance like this at Anfield. So how are these the same set of players? Like, this is kind of remarkable. So it's something in them that drove them yesterday. The only concern I have is that, well, they could do it at Anfield. They did it last season at Anfield where they got a point and they could have won the game at the end. And when they go to the likes of Brentford, it was like, well, you know, we should beat them. We probably have more quality than them on the pitch. And Brighton have done a number on United at Old Trafford in recent seasons.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if we're talking about yesterday, right, so they go 1-0 up and there's a point here midway through the first half where United really should have doubled the lead and they look unbelievably dangerous. This, I already touched it there, one of the Dalot moments, is that Ahmad, Cunha, Mbeumo, Fernandes and Dalot are all, Dalot flaws and all, are all part of this constant attack on Liverpool's box. So they're getting half the team up in support of doubling United's lead. 24th minute, you have Cunha's crossfield ball to Ahmad. So Ahmad is torturing Kirkus. He's playing into his vulnerabilities, right? Yeah. He's toying with him. Pulls it back to Bruno Fernandes on the edge of the box and that shaves the post. And then you have 3 minutes later, Cunha fires across from the right-hand side. Marmadashvili spills the ball and it falls to Mount.
Yeah.
Flicks it over the bar.
That's a great chance, actually.
Pure instinct. Right after that, Mount gets another opportunity outside the box. Takes a shot, Marmadashvili saves it. So there's 3 chances in a row that United have and the Liverpool fans are getting very antsy.
Yeah.
Very antsy to that point. So it's hard to fathom that you have the runaway champions from last season versus the most laughed at club of last season, are joint with Spurs. Now, how has that happened? That they have matched them and they're equal yesterday.
And Liverpool have spent.
It's this conundrum of
quite a lot
Manchester.
Of money as well.
Well, you do have to factor in that Liverpool are in a slump. Like, that's one of the reasons this is.
But they did it last season, Anfield. So how are they able to do this?
This is exactly the game they'd strike back as well in a slump, you would think, that they'd get up for that type of game at home against United.
Well, we can talk with Henry Winter about Liverpool and what's going on there.
United are in the red though, aren't they?
Do you know that was United's first away win in 7 months?
Is that right?
You count the summer months, you know. It's a quirky statistic. But a great day for United. I will put them into the green. We can move on to Liverpool here if you like. No problem with that. So Liverpool, they shall be as red as their home jersey yesterday. However, they did create a number of opportunities, as we said. Cody Gakpo had a hat-trick of hitting the post. Isak was through 1-on-1 on Lamens, who saved it. The linesman raised his flag. Was it offside? It didn't look offside.
I don't think it was.
It's a great through ball by Konate, nevertheless. Mo Salah. I mean, let's talk about Mo Salah here, right? So I was noting all the chances in the game as they were happening, and it's just, it's all Liverpool, right? It's all Liverpool in this game that United played really well in. So Gakpo is supposed to get in the 50th minute. 54th minute, Salah back post, botches it, bodies it into the ground and it goes over.
That was bad.
Yeah. That McAllister curled one just over the bar inside the box. And then in the 65th minute.
What was the hat doing? What function? What, like?
Keep pressure on it.
I mean, come on. What was it doing? Preventing a concussion?
We're not doctors.
Football is like, got special. It's like titanium plate in it.
Well, I'll look it up.
It's a little football helmet. What was it doing?
The big moment for me in this game, 65th minute, Salah. This is the near post one. This is very like the Chelsea missed chance at Stamford Bridge when Wirtz set him up, right? Salah misses near post. He had five other Liverpool players in the box. And this kind of summed up Liverpool. So they were going for it. You can't accuse them of not going for it. But there was a sense of premature panic about the situation that they probably didn't need to be. They could have broken United down. Van Dijk touched on that afterwards as well. But if you listen to Arne Slot afterwards, he was quite philosophical about it all, and that the chances are being created. When do you really start worrying about a team? When they don't create any chances. And that certainly wasn't happening. So there's chance after chance here. Cody Gakpo misses an absolute sitter at 2-1 down the header that he puts wide.
Yeah, Jesus.
Could have been a very different game where, say, for argument's sake, right, Liverpool will go on and win that game 2-1. I still think it would be kind of similar enough conversation. So, well, United have proven that they can actually perform when it gets to it. Yeah. Liverpool won the game just, but they have a load of flaws. It's kind of pretty much still talk about this the same way, even though it's 2-1, you know?
Well, yeah, but then people also make the argument that, like, if Liverpool are winning games, these big games, and not playing well,
no, but we did make that argument when they're winning all the games. We still made the point and they're not playing well, you know?
Yeah, maybe it's one too many, like.
And, De Ligt had an opportunity to make it 3 at the end as well. So, it was a game littered with opportunities, primarily for Liverpool. But it's still a definitive red. The performance. Yeah. This is the bizarre game to analyse in that sense, certainly when it comes to performance rankings. You know, United looking incredibly vulnerable at times to conceding a goal, but they are definitive green for the way they played overall. Liverpool have to be in the red, but Jesus, like, the number of times that they should have scored, not could have, should have scored. So if they get their finishing in order and get a bit solid at the back, they should still be winning the league this year, but it feels like a complete dream at this point that they would, because again it's another great weekend for Arsenal. They go to Fulham and they win. Manchester City beat Everton 2-0 at the Etihad. It looks like Liverpool are a million miles off it. The only thing that they could be doing now is like a Paris Saint-Germain last season, where they were very poor in the first half of the campaign and they go on and win it all.
I wouldn't be getting too worried if I was a Liverpool fan. I would just like to see,
would you not, because this is signs all season long here are porous at the back, that they don't have a balance in that team. A lot of their new players, the two new fullbacks, their playmaker and their main striker, they've all started poorly.
Yeah, I would say that's a lot. I think Ekitike should be starting. I don't see why he was dropped for that game. I'd like to know the reason. Maybe it's to do with the fact that you've paid so much money for the other player that you can't simply drop both the 100 million plus pound players for that game. But I think, there's a few... It's weird Frimpong being on the bench as well. I don't really get that. Why have you brought him in? Like, if you're keen on playing Kirk as a left-back...
The Crystal Palace game seems to be the one that's turned Schlatt against that.
Sure, Kirk has had a few bad games, like, really.
He's pretty much singled them out after that game. Conor Bradley was, again, he was all right. He had a couple of heavy touches. He's not playing with the confidence that he had when he was wearing number 84. As opposed to number 12, when he's more prominent.
I don't think he offers you a lot going forward.
But he did when he got into the team. There was something about Bradley where it's like, he was faring very well in the comparison with Trent, because Liverpool fans are a bit angry at Alexander Arnold. But now that Trent's left the building, it's like, oh, geez, what are our right back options here? Frimpong, that Schlatt has suddenly said, well, not really having you at the moment. You haven't settled in. I don't like the way you're playing in our team. And Bradley, who's a guy who's been really promoted. I mean, there's probably no other better way to word it. Like, he's been promoted to someone with responsibility rather than hope.
Yeah.
That's a big step up.
It's having an impact on Salah as well, clearly, that right back situation.
I mean, look, there's two players here to talk about, like, in the contrasting fortunes. Like Harry Maguire. Like Harry Maguire's redemption should be studied, and a guy who just kept at it, who just kept taking the, and he milked that goal too when he scored it. Like he really took in the sport and he looked around and he was really taking it in. Like he
there's a time wasting thing as well.
He's been abused from all over the shop.
That's
the redemptive arc of Harry Maguire to Mo Salah. This time last year, Mo Salah, untouchable. Untouchable. And now, for a variety of reasons, some potentially way more serious than what we're going to talk about here, and some just pure football reasons, not happening at all for him at the moment. To the question of, like, do they need to take Salah out of the team?
Yeah.
And that seems unlikely. Liverpool in the red, for sure.
Yeah.
We move on. Yep. Croke Park, Saturday evening.
Yeah.
Well, what a game this was, you know. Because it didn't look great, you know, Jared. Did it look like your boys were going to give us one hell of a beating once again when they get over early? They go 7-0 ahead, and you're thinking, this is going to be another tonking from Munster. However, that was not the case. A beautiful day at the office.
Yeah. It was, yeah.
What happened?
Well, I think, like, Munster just seemed to have an answer for everything that Leinster brought. I think if you'd have. Leinster stars in particular were a bit rusty, didn't have their best outings. I thought Munster,
they lost Conan and somebody else in the warm up, did they?
Or they lost Conan and Tony O'Brien. And yeah, and so Jordan Larmour came in late and Max Deegan came in. I don't think either had a great game. Larmour went off, looked like a head injury after 50-60 minutes maybe. But like Munster had their problems as well. Like,
yeah,
Gleeson went off.
Yeah, I wouldn't be having the whole, like, Leinster thing too much now, because Munster had a lot of like the whole thing here with Leinster is it's the first time the players came together, the frontline prime players since the Lions storm. That is fair, right? So they're going to be rusty. It's also Ty Burns' first game; and he got player of the match. Like Munster had a pile of players missing themselves. They had Craig Casey missing. They had Ollie Yeager. They had Jad Hannett, Alex Kendellin, Calvin Nash.
Yeah,
Tom O'Hearn. Who's in the Ireland squad, one of only four Munster players. Yeah. So this wasn't Munster at their full strength either.
No.
But I don't know about, it's not a direct comparison by any means, but there was elements of Liverpool and Leinster and vice versa this weekend. In that Leinster were dominating Munster for large portions of that second half. Like it was a strange game in one sense, in that Jack Prowdy gets that penalty early in the second half to put Munster, was a 24-7 up, and that was the scoreline right until the death.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, it was just Leinster pounding the Munster try line, and somehow Munster's defence keeping them out. So it was an incredible collective effort.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't, I don't think you'd accuse Leinster of a lack of effort by any means, but there was an absence of ingenuity and creativity that Munster had. Munster had this confidence about them.
Yeah,
I think summed up by the differences in the out half play by play, which was by no means the winning and losing of the game, because Jack Crowley played very well and Sam Prendergast didn't, but it's a symbol of the confidence that both teams were illustrating.
Yeah, I thought Leinster ran out of ideas when they did push them deep into their 22. I thought they were just going through phases, and then it just got to the point every time that like a Ty Burn just won the ball back, and it was a bit like, let's throw it out to the wingers every now and then, try and, you know, do a loop pass, do something. Prendergast wasn't really seem to get too much ball when they got into the 22. But yeah, that 10 battle, I think, it's fairly one-sided in the end, really.
Yeah. It's amazing the impact that Clayton McMillan has had, because I'm looking to him here in all of this. So Andrew Smith goes off very early.
Yeah, Nankville comes on for him.
Nankville comes on, and it's like he's staying on the right here. He's staying out wide. And I was like, how often has Nankville played out wide? And he laughs to Simon Zeebo afterwards, like, I didn't know what I was doing out there.
Yeah.
But I didn't get exposed. He was laughing. Yeah.
I kind of thought Tom Farrell would go out there. I thought his skill set was a bit more suited.
Yeah, thank God he stayed in the centre.
It's the right decision in the end.
Kelly were fantastic. And it was just, like, if you want to be real simple about it, the tries were so aesthetically pleasing. Like
brilliant.
I mean, the Farrell scoop up, the Ethan Coughlin intercept. And there's something great about a breakaway rugby try.
And there's something poetic about being the other way around as well.
Yeah, well, there's that, but also, well, it's scrum half intercepting scrum half, right? But you just have so much time to watch it as a fan that this is going to happen. Yeah. And there's the 0.001% chance that he's going to drop the ball as well. So you never quite keep your eyes off.
Well, he had the one later in the game as well. He tried to do the exact same thing on their line when they were under a bit of pressure. Drops it, and then Leinster were calling for a penalty. But you can clearly see he quite nearly did the same thing again.
And there was a point after Crowdie's penalty when Tacker Abrahams nearly intercepts himself out wide. I would say the Munster fans around us, like, that could be the turning point.
He lost track of what he was doing there for a second. He got a bit excited.
That could be the turning point of the game, because again, there is this PTSD. Was like Munster clearly inferior to Leinster over the last number of years. It was like you're just waiting for that Leinster reaction. And there was a reaction, but it just quite simply wasn't good enough.
No, it wasn't. No.
Whereas Munster played with this unabating confidence, which is wonderful to see and has been severely lacking these fears. It's very easy to compare it to this time last year and that game and how we talked about it. The game was finished inside 15 minutes, despite Munster themselves creating opportunities afterwards. Yeah. This is a different story. There was a composure to this performance.
There was,
a defensive composure particularly.
And they went after key players. Like, I thought Gibson Park was put under a lot of pressure, and resulting in that, I think he had one of his worst games I've seen him play in a long, long time. James Lowe, Leinster play well when he's playing well, and he wasn't really involved in a lot of the game at all. And I saw he spent too much time trying to start little fights and, you know, push them out of ruck, and you're just like, just focus on your game. And he wasn't. We often see him coming off loop passes from the 10. I didn't see much of that the weekend. Maybe it is just a bit of rustiness. It's a lot of their first games back, not James Lowe's, but those kind of partnerships and connections are just back. So, you know, you don't look into it too much as a Leinster fan, I wouldn't say, individually speaking, but maybe the makeup of the team, you might start to worry a little bit. Because the season, they're 1-4 on the season.
The thing is as well, there's a huge hiatus now for them, so they're not going to be back together again until, Champions Cup December? Well, maybe the week before? So, it's a frustration for Leo Cullen.
This weekend.
They have to contend with every season. They play Zebra this weekend, but there's going to be players making their debuts, I'd say.
See, there's a few players that need to make sure that they're
the vast majority
against the All Blacks.
The vast majority of Ireland squad is Leinster, so Leo Cullen's not going to be seeing most of
players. Are you dropping players off the back of this for the All Blacks?
I'm definitely looking at them.
Who?
I'd look at James Lowe.
And when you look at someone, you obviously have a replacement in mind.
I'd want to see, who's in camp there. So you've Stockdale's in camp.
Stockdale's in camp.
Osborne's in camp.
It looks like Mac Hansen's not going to be.
There's worries about him, yeah.
So worries about him, worries about Gleeson.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
I don't think so. Was there?
A few others, I think. Anyway, so give me a replacement for James Lowe.
For James Lowe against the All Blacks. Well, I'm not saying that take him out of the squad. I'm saying that.
The team.
I don't think he's 100% in at the minute. Because he had a good game against the Sharks. But that's all you're going off. And then he's come into a big game, and I don't think he was great.
Mm hmm.
Now, look, I don't think a lot of them were great, so I don't want to single out one player. I think there's a few players there that are probably not. I don't think Jamie Osborne has that fullback position nailed down either.
Yeah.
Who's. But you. Go on. When you're taking these guys out, who's going to get in now? Because obviously they picked Hansen at fullback for Connacht. Yeah.
Well, I think if Hansen's out, I think Michael Lowry comes in.
I was saying that to you before the show,
I think why you're bringing him then. He's a specialised fullback. I don't know. It would be a massive task for him to come back. I think he played his only game for Ireland against USA. So coming back and playing the All Blacks is a much bigger task than that.
So that's not going to happen.
Well, I don't know. He comes in. If he is called in, I don't know. I have no idea whether Hansen is out completely or if Lowry comes in. But if he does and he impresses in training, he's had a great start to the season. He's been brilliant. Would you not pick him based on that? He's not experienced enough for you to get in, do you think?
I don't think you can stick him straight in the All Blacks game. He wasn't in the original squad, was he?
No.
So
no.
It would be a bit of a sign that, like, I didn't think this thing through. I don't have enough cover. He clearly felt he had cover. And where did Stockdale is
not the weekend
spoken about as a fullback?
Well, he played one game this season at fullback, and I think that's why he played that game at fullback, was to get him
under
a game, get him some minutes, probably a nudge given to Ulster, if you can play him a fullback there. Played the week, he played a wing, interestingly enough, at the weekend, so with Lowry back. So I don't know, like,
I think they should stick Lowry in the squad and give him some opportunities across this.
Like,
but I don't think you're dropping players off the back of this one performance who've
been
it's big. It's more than one
Andy
performance
over the last 4 years.
This is one of the biggest games of the season.
So who
hang on, the lads who played well for him, many of them delivered for Andy Farrell the last time he had big games, which was the Lions. So he's going to more than likely, and whether or not this is right or wrong, more than likely he's going to favour that quality of performance and go, well, that was a bit of a blip for you guys, wasn't it? Kick up the hole.
Yeah.
How are you going to respond? And then it's just man management as opposed to going, I don't trust you now off the back of one performance.
Who would you have it out of half against New Zealand?
Crowley.
Well, not the same logic.
No, neither of those went. He wasn't part of the
Lions. Well, yeah, but you're talking about Ireland as well. Like, Prendergast is the one that's been picked over the last while.
It hasn't been great. He's been... Look, there's people in the comments went mad last week when we were suggesting that Harry Byrne might come in and start ahead of Prendergast. Like, oh, he was generational. He's going through a blip and he's having some difficulties. That doesn't mean that you automatically pick him week in, week out forever. It's like loads of young players have a bit of a blip, a second season difficulty, and they come back from it. Like... almost everybody has had this,
yeah,
at various stages in their careers. So it's like I think there's a slight loss of form, but it's not the same logic to like Lowe, who is, you know, one of our best players, suddenly coming out of the team because Leinster got beaten.
But no, I'm not saying take him out. I'm just saying that he has. I think he has to.
No, but you're
perform
saying
well
poorly
in training.
Like because I don't Leinster think it's unfair. It's not a reason to drop a player, but if a player is playing poorly, that is a reason to drop him. That could
like
be
no,
that you
no one's player should really be guaranteed in that squad at this point because we do have an aging group, so there should be opportunity to battle people out in training. And I'm not saying there's not, but if we're just going to keep picking the same players even though they're not playing well, that's not a great sign.
Yeah, but look,
you want informed players in the squad.
Games were in the Lions and he did okay in those two tests. And so look, I don't know. I think there's no. I don't think there's any credible alternative for him for the game against the All Blacks.
For James Lowe,
yeah.
I don't think Jacob Stockdale will be terrible. I think he has a lot of international experience. I don't think you swap them straight away, unless Stockdale impresses in training and beats him out of the place. But
anybody else position in doubt as a result of this game?
I would wonder, like, the front row, like, I don't think there's enough, like, you'd have to bring someone into squad. I don't know if there's... Like, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't have anyone in my head that I'd pull straight out of the squad. I'd like to see the centre partnership.
Any of the Munster team who put their hands up and are like feeling particularly aggrieved after it?
Tom Farrell. I said last week. I'll say it again. He should be in the squad. Like, I don't care that he's 32. Robbie Henshaw's 32. Bundiaki's 35. I know they've proved themselves at international level, but Tom Farrell is playing the best rugby of his life. He's out playing Gary Ringrose and Robbie Henshaw in that midfield. You see what he can do at the weekend. That try, unbelievable ability. Should be in the squad. I don't get the argument that he shouldn't because he's too old. Every centre could be argued as being too old in that squad, nearly except for Ringrose. Like, really?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Before we move on here, speaking of aesthetically pleasing, how about Jack Crowley's sidestep on Jordan Armour and James Gibson Park? I mean.
Beautiful.
There was some beautiful sights there on Saturday evening. I mean, there really were. You could power rank the most beautiful things to be seen in Croke Park on Saturday. It'd be a really good list. That'd be right up there.
Oh yeah.
That got the crowd going like little else.
Crowley's left foot kicking as well. Kicking off right.
He's
and
outside
left.
Of the right foot kicking twice.
Seriously,
in the second
dynamic
half.
Kicking all of a sudden this season. Not
gained
all of a sudden,
huge but. Territory for Munster twice in the second half. It was outside the right foot. And I'm delighted too for Ethan Coughlin.
Yeah,
because he's one of the lesser renowned players on the pitch, and to have that moment for himself.
Well, that was talked about in the build up is that they're really going to miss Craig Casey in this game, and like you always miss Craig Casey, he's a great player, but Coughlin, like, he was exceptional just in general as well. But obviously the intercept try is the highlight. Kind of thought, geez, does he have to pace here? He's two wingers chasing down from either side, but he held strong. And
the one where he's Brian Gleeson, so he gets the equalising try.
Yes.
And then he goes off, and then Gavin Coombs, like, what a performance, and another great moment, that contender for the power ranking top five great moments is him getting sin-binned and cheering to the crowd.
That's in Sports File Images of the Year.
It was amazing.
That was
it was just, well, you need it in motion, don't you? You need the runoff, and you need him looking up to the camera. And the crowd around us too was great, because there was a good few Leinster supporters leaving.
I noticed 72, that.
73 minute mark, they were gone.
Yeah.
It was a great day. It was a great day. And there was a lot of Leinster fans who were saying afterwards, it's a good result for Irish rugby. I was like, that's a very good way of looking at it.
It is a good result for Rugby. Rory O'Connor was reporting that there was a bit of booing of Prendergast or cheers when he was. Did he go off for HIA?
Did at the end of the first half, he did.
Yeah, Rory O'Connor said that the online toxicity spilled onto the.
I think that
the stadium, and there were cheers.
People
that,
being like,
did that happen?
I don't remember hearing boos.
Much fans cheering.
I wouldn't have been surprised if it's a bit like, oh look, he's going off, he's bottling it, but he was going off for a HIA.
Yeah, if Munster fans are cheering, that's totally fine. If it was Leinster supporters booing or cheering that he went off, that would be a worry.
Munster fans cheering someone going off for HIA is fine. Is that what you said?
No, that's definitely not fine.
No, it's not. It's like Prendergast, the big rival to the Jack Rowdy out half position. Oh great, he's off. Pantomime. I'm telling you, if it was Leinster supporters turning against Prendergast, that would be a concern.
Yeah, I think anyway. There are a few that do believe that he shouldn't start.
If you're going on form and game by game, because this whole battle is so close, it's very difficult to bat for Prendergast at the moment.
Yeah.
But he'll still have his fans. He's not a lost cause either. Like, go easy on the guy. The guy's going to get it. That was one of my first thoughts afterwards. He's going to get this in the neck now for the next couple of days. It's like everyone's going to have a go at Prendergast.
That's not right.
So like, Crowdy was magnificent. Let's be fair about this, though. Whatever about Prendergast, Crowdy was unbelievable.
Yeah.
So Munster in the green, we can just double this up with Leinster in the red, unless there's any debate about that. I'll leave a silence. There's not. We'll move on.
No.
We will move on to... Oh, Athlone Town. Yeah, so unbelievable here. The Women's FAI Cup final yesterday. Athlone Town 3, Bulls 2. A hat-trick. Kelly Brady. And our own Darragh Smith-Nothing was in attendance.
Yeah, I went to this game. I think going into it, I would have expected Athlone. I think a lot of people expected Athlone to not take a comfortable victory, but to definitely dominate the game. And there was a good showing from Athlone. Their fans are very good, actually. It's the first time I've gone to one of their games this season. But Bowes kind of shocked them coming out of the gate. Alana McAvoy with a great effort from distance took the lead. And then Athlone kind of took control of the game. And Kelly Brady, obviously, was excellent on the day. Scored a hat-trick then, went up 3-1. Then another great goal from Aoife Brennan.
The Bowles goals particularly here impressed you.
Unbelievable, It's just a shame because they'll get lost. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, you talk about scoring great points before a more important point in a hurling match.
Oh, the Maris Bradley thing, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of like that. Like, these goals kind of be lost, but some great efforts. Athlone, they looked in control for the most part. There was a good bit of pressure from Bowes towards the end when it was 3-2 and they realised they had a chance. But it never really felt like they were going to bring it to extra time.
Yeah. Athlone have had a mad last couple of years because it's... tumultuous this year, alone with Colin Fortune suddenly leaving him, but they had a European adventure. The rebound in the cup is extraordinary because last year they were in the same match, the FAI Cup final, and they got hockeyed.
Yeah.
By Shells, 6-1.
6-1, yeah.
But to respond yesterday in that manner, to win it.
Yeah. New manager as well. Like, it's been a tough, not even just a couple of seasons, tough like 6-8 weeks for him, really. Like, there's been a massive shake-up in the club, but new manager John Sullivan, to be fair to him, he's brought home some silverware alongside the league. So I think this should be all right next season. I think there'll be a few changes in the squad. They'll probably bring in a few players, probably lose a couple of players after their European stint, but they were quite impressive. But Bowes, to be fair to them, as underdogs, made a very competitive game in the end.
All right. An undoubted green there for Athlone Town. Where are we at next? We got ourselves...
The GAA clubs.
Okay, no problem. So, a bit like last week, right? We're going to touch on this with Tommy Rooney in depth later on the show. So just to highlight two, which Ger Gilroy will be very happy with here. Athy 117, Nace 18 points. So Athy... snapped the bid for 5 in a row and Kildare.
Yeah, Nace, the super club with Philly McMahon in charge.
Excuse me.
Tied outside managers last year and were just beaten by Nace in extra time. And then this year they went internal and now they're county champions. And they've got, you know, really strong seasoned players and they've got some brilliant young players coming through. So, very exciting.
And meanwhile, in Antrim, this is another way we want to highlight here, St. John's. 52 years they've waited for an Antrim Senior Hurling Championship title and they got it yesterday. 2-16 to 1-18 victors against Lochiel Shamrocks.
Mentioned this in passing last week about how important it was for the city to start producing good teams. I mean, obviously, it was a heartland, Belfast, of hurling in the 60s and 70s. when the Johnnies were last winning.
Yeah.
But since then, it's largely been the North Antrim clubs from the Glens who have been the stalwarts of Antrim hurling. And the Johnnies, I think they beat Dunloy in the semis and then Lochiel in the final. That's big for them and for everybody.
Yeah, brilliant. An undoubted green there. And then finally, Ulster Rugby. They probably would have had this place to themselves had it not been Munster's night on Saturday. But what a victory here. 34-26 in South Africa against the Sharks.
I think the best way to sum this one up is I'll just read out the Sharks team. Like so you have Empanambi in the front row. You have... sorry, I've got the wrong team here. But they had Etzebeth back. They had all the South African internationals back. So they had 7 or 8 or 9 internationals back in the team. And it was a bit like, this might be a tall order. I know Ulster are in good form, but, you know, they've got Mbonambi back. Vincent Cock was back. Ibn Etzebeth, Khaleesi. Grant Williams was playing at 9. Mpimpi, Esther Hazen, Ethan Hooker, Van der Merwe at fullback.
Mm-hmm.
And the bench was very strong as well. So I was thinking, this might be a bit of a tall order going away from home in Durban. But Jesus. And they didn't just win the game. The final score might actually flatter the Sharks a little bit. They very much dominated the game. 26-34 that ended, but some players really impressed. Nathan Doak, player of the match again, second week in a row. Another guy where you're like, should be in the Irish squad, but they're definitely in the green for sure.
I'm sure Henry Winter is listening with massive interest here in the waiting room. But we should note that the Telegraph Football X page is reporting that Sean Dyche is being set to be appointed the new head coach of Nottingham Forest. So we will talk about this and much more with Henry Winter after this. But for now, that was your hopefully very enjoyable performance rankings.
Off the Ball's performance rankings.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.